I'm Cliff Kelly, Vietnam veteran and host of America's Heroes Group, the game changer in radio, print, and digital media programming. We are a roundtable talk show where information, resources, and referrals are provided intentionally every Saturday to empower our military population on WVON 1690 AM, the iHeart Radio app from 4 to 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. Please visit our website at www.americashg.org.
Good afternoon, good afternoon. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON, America's Heroes Group, and roundtable with partner University of Chicago Office of Civic Engagement. June is LGBT Pride Month, and of course today is Saturday, June 6th. I'm the host, Cliff Kelly. Our executive producer is Glenda Smith, our media digital producer is Manny Corazzari, and our assistant digital media producer is Titus Williams. And our panelist is, let me forget this. Today's broadcast is dedicated to George Floyd and also veteran Dr. Conrad Wuerl. And, terrible thing now. And now we have our panelist here on the air. He is Reuben J. Miller, assistant professor in the University of Chicago School of Social Service Administration. And how are you, Doc? How you doing, Professor?
I'm doing well, despite the circumstances. I'm doing well.
I understand. The discussion, how and why they have taken form, protest. What does that mean for Black Chicagoans? Reuben Jonathan Miller is assistant professor in the University of Chicago School of Social Service Administration. His research examines life at the intersections of race, poverty, crime control, and social welfare policy. He is the author of the forthcoming book, Halfway Home, Race, Punishment, and the Afterlife of Mass Incarceration, based on 15 years of research and practice with currently and formerly incarcerated people. Halfway Home will be published by Little Brown & Company in February of 2021. Dr. Miller was born and raised in Chicago's South Side. He has conducted research in Chicago, Detroit, and New York City, examining how the laws and policies we enact to control crime have changed the contours of citizenship, community, and family life for poor people, and especially for poor Black Americans. This is going to be great. Thank you again, Doc, for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Absolutely. Go right ahead. How do we start off?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we could think together about how and why the protests have taken the shape that they've taken. Mm-hmm. You know, what and what that means for our city, for Chicago, and for Black life in the city. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I just wanted to, I suppose the thing that's important for us to remember is, you know, when we think about any kind of urban uprising, any kind of rebellion historically, whether that was, you know, the rebellions that followed in the wake of the assassination of you know, King, Kennedy, and X, kind of in reverse order, of course. Mm-hmm. Or if we think about, you know, any of the rebellions that took place in the city during bread strikes, you know, the famous Haymarket or something like that. That rebellions take many forms. You know, there's the peaceful side of things that I think people are calling for and that we certainly value. But they're also the violent, there's the violent side of the rebellion that's part and parcel of it, all of its rebellion. The looting, you know, stealing from shops, breaking windows, fighting back with the police, like all of these are part and parcel of rebellions and have been historically. And I think that these things happen because the social order that we're trying to establish or reestablish that everyone's calling for, you know, everybody calm down, you know, we need to reestablish order, get order in our streets. We have to remember that the social order doesn't work for people. You know, the social order that we're calling for is the order that got George Floyd killed, that got, you know, over 200 instances of police brutality documented on Twitter feeds in the last 8 days, you know, in response to the protest. So anyway, I just think that's an important thing to remember.
Mm-hmm, good point. Right. So I'm sure you have done a lot. You had a lot to look over, that's for sure, to come out with some ideas. Help us.
Yeah. Cliff, when you say that, what do you mean?
I think that based on your studies and so forth, you would come up with some answers to those questions you were just asking.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please.
Sure. Yeah, I think the fundamental problem that we're looking at are that people have been held or kept, have been excluded from participating in, you know, the political economy and culture in ways that they find meaningful. And so I think that the answer is the full inclusion of Black people in the social and civic life of the city. You know, so what do I think that looks like? Mm-hmm. I think that looks like all the things that I think you've been talking about over many years on the radio, all the things that activists across the city have been asking for: well-funded schools, access to employment, mm-hmm. fair treatment on you know, by police, equitable treatment by the police, practices of accountability. So when police engage in practices of police brutality, that they don't investigate themselves, if there's an independent third parties with teeth, mm-hmm. that are able to aid in the prosecution, I think these kinds of things are the things that help ensure that people are able to fully participate in the political and economic life of the city. And I think we start there. I think that's where the answers to these sorts of problems lie.
Let me ask you, and I think what you're doing is extremely important. You know, when you talk about the police, and of course we're talking about them more now than ever, I presume, Dr. Miller, I can recall Officer Friendly when I was a kid. When I was a child, I lived on the South Side, went to grammar school on the South Side, of course, and I can remember, Doc, my parents and other people, mm-hmm. you know, saying, that they would be asking. In fact, I even remember the number on the squad car, 151, mm-hmm. and if it was in the summertime, he might have. He may be hot, you know. He's got the windows open. People will be asking him. You want some water? You want some lemonade? That doesn't exist anymore. That was Officer Friendly.
That's right.
So that's right. I remember that like it was yesterday. So help me with that. Why is there a difference, Dr. Miller?
Well, I think there's been a fundamental shift in policing practices.
Okay.
And so I and these shifts. really began, I think, in the 1960s and 70s is where we start to see changes in policing, and also changes in the targets of policing. So, you see a new, you know, it's interesting, just to make a point about this, you know, I think that there's a belief that the way people think and feel about people doesn't matter so much, but it absolutely does. And by that, I mean, we've changed the way that we think about problems that we face in American cities. So the 60s and 70s, and certainly in the 1980s, there was this emphasis on problems with, for example, the Black family. The Black family gets viewed as pathology in the flesh, as the problem incarnate, and Black youth, that kid, the problem of these Black youth, they're marauding, they don't have role models, they don't have father figures, they don't have the things that they need, they don't have a conscience. If you remember all that rhetoric from the late 1980s and 1990s, you know, super predators and these kinds of things, sure. You know, all that comes from these shifts in law and policy, and it comes in changes in the ways that we perceive youth. So the way we view Black kids has, I think, fundamentally changed over this period, so much so that we view these kids as the problem. And so we started cracking down. You know, you start to see that the advent of policing strategies that are no longer about building deep, long connections with people in the community, but the practices are now about cracking down on these tough, bad kids, these bad actors, these bad Black boys and girls. And so, when you see the advent of the tough on crime movement, you know, get tough, get tough, get tough, you see a fundamental change in the relationship between communities and the police, and not just the police, different relationships between judges and the communities, different relationships between teachers and the communities, because Black people are viewed as people to be feared.
You know, and again, Doc, and I understand everything you're saying. When I was growing up, the people, my neighbors, neighbors were great. In fact, one of the neighbors was a doctor. Another one got, I don't know how many degrees from Northwestern. My brother went to Northwestern, you know, and these things just worked out. So where did it go wrong? I don't know what he said go wrong. I just don't understand the difference then, doctor, and now.
Between what's happening in the streets? A couple interesting things. You know, more people are... More Black people go to college now than they did 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
I believe that.
More Black people are in the middle class now, certainly, than they were in the, and we're talking about a period before the 70s, but let me just use this as a benchmark, you know, than they were in the 70s. So even with these things, because the fundamental nature of the relationship between Black people and, in this case, the police has changed, it doesn't matter if you're the kid of a doctor. You know, you're going to get your head cracked, you know, from, you know.
I got you. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So this view, the shifting view of who's doing what, like of what the threat is, really does matter. You know, Cliff, there was a really interesting study by an economist, Raj Chetty, that traced, because you were asking these questions about what happened, why are things the way they are. And there's a really interesting study that traced the trajectories of the wealth trajectories of Black people. But it wasn't just Black people, it was all races. And it looked across races. If you're born with a certain income, how likely are you to keep it? How likely are you to lose it? Oh, yeah. How likely are you to move up? Mm-hmm. And what they found was that Black people within a generation were more likely to lose wealth, but not only lose wealth, like to fall in social mobility than other racial groups, not only more likely to fall in social mobility than other racial groups, that the wealth that they had didn't protect them in the same way. So a black boy in a household that made, you know, in the top 1%, so a millionaire household, was just as likely to be arrested as a white boy who was raised in a family that made $34,000 a year.
Okay, I got you.
So the way we view, you know, this view of black children as guilty, not innocent, as a problem, shows up in all kinds of ways that's really messing us up.
It certainly does. Now, you, of course, are doing something about it over at the Social Service Administration at the UC, which I'm so happy you're over there, Doc. What is being done to try to correct this? Because I'm so glad you're doing it.
Well, I appreciate that. I think if we look at the protest now, there are a number of things. So on the law and policy side of things, the thing that encourages me most about what's happening on the law and policy front is the role that formerly incarcerated activists are now playing in shaping criminal justice law and policy. The national networks of formerly incarcerated activists that say, you know, we're closest to the problem. You know, we understand what it's like to be arrested. We understand what it's like to have done time. And because of that, we are experts, not in, not naturally, but through our experiences, we bring a perspective to criminal justice policy that others have not seen. So I'm excited about that. I'm also excited about these young activists who are in the streets right now. Okay. This is to me, a really important moment and an opportunity, if we seize it, that could really change what's happening in the world. You'll remember the years of activism that were happening around the John Birch torture.
Absolutely, yes.
It took 30 years,
yeah.
But activists were relentless.
Mm-hmm.
And not only did they win settlements for people, did they begin to get people free who were unjustly incarcerated, but they were able to institute changes at the level of school curriculum. They were able to have police torture defined as torture, which it wasn't before, which changed the way we can prosecute police malfeasance. So these are just two examples of the kinds of things. And in both those examples, I'm looking at these activists who are really pushing us to think differently about how the world should work.
You know, this book is going to be, this is going to be great. And you're going to have to come on and tell me about it. Halfway Home, Race, Punishment, and the Afterlife of Mass Incarceration. That's coming out when?
February.
February.
2021. I look forward to coming back.
Oh, absolutely. This is something that is very meaningful. You know, I was a delegate to the ACLU, and there's a number of different organizations, which I know you probably know all of them, Dr. Miller. And hopefully, and I really think that organizations such as your own, and the Chicago School of Social Service. Things are going to improve, don't you think?
I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I'm very hopeful.
Yeah, I think so. Because there are so many people, such as yourself and others, that really want to help people. And then we see what's going on now. Tell me what you think about what's going on at this moment with, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. With the protests, definitely with the push for the change in law and policy, definitely with the new with Black Lives Matter, for example, taking a very central part in how we think about and understand black politics, mm-hmm. and this push. And again, I'm looking squarely at these young activists, but not just the young ones, you know, people who have really laid the groundwork for years and years and years, brothers and sisters who are, you know, a part of the Panthers, who are part of SNCC, who are part of the hundreds of local organizations in the city, who do everything from social service work to who are sitting on councils for the mayor, the new mayor, Mayor Lightfoot, who's sitting on councils for the government. I mean, what we see, I think, are new possibilities. If we take advantage of this time, we can reimagine not just how policing looks in our city. We can reimagine how government responds to black people in our city.
Exactly.
And while, you know, there's been trouble, I mean, you know, stores have been, you know, looted and things have been burned down and, you know, this kind of thing. I think this is all a part of the rebellion. And just like we had an opportunity to rebuild after the 1960s, beyond the Voting Rights Act, which was a real, victory and a real moment for opportunity, we have a new opportunity to push for a deeper inclusion of black people in the broader politics of the city. And so you've got people who call themselves, for example, abolitionists, and they believe that we have to reimagine how the law works, mm-hmm. not just mm-hmm. the police, but how government should work in such a way that our first response shouldn't be to call the police or to need to call the police, or how we might include these children that we once greatly feared so that they're not engaging in the kinds of crimes that make us afraid of them, you know? And so I think this is a real moment of opportunity. I think people are pushing us to seize it. I think we should listen.
I think you're totally correct. I think it's moving, and I'm looking forward to February 2021.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and then after that, who knows what you're going to do, right? Let me ask you, Doc, do you have children?
I do.
Good. May I ask age and sex?
Yeah. So my oldest daughter is 21 and my boy is 14.
Okay.
So a good range.
Yes. Yeah, I said, wow. Yeah, more so than I thought, you know? Right. More so than I thought. That is just great. Well, give us a close. What should I know?
I think that we should be thinking about the opportunities that this moment is presenting. I think that we should be thinking about, we should listen to these young activists who are on the street, who are pushing in ways that we don't perhaps always agree with or even understand, because just like the youth did in generations before, they are leading us into a new way, into a new future. And I think that there are new ideas on the ground about the way that black people specifically can be included in a more powerful way in the social and civic life of this city. That's what I think.
And I'm sure your book and studies, Doc, are going to suggest that.
Yes.
Yeah.
there'll be lots more to talk about when I come back.
Yeah. Yeah. You hesitated for a moment. I say, he's gonna. No, I think that's really great, because there's so much going on that we really need to make sure that a lot of these young people, because there's so many of them that have so much to offer. And, you know, that's what I really dislike is the waste. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because I have met some, as I know you have, obviously, you're right, I've met some young people that are tremendous, you know. But but notwithstanding that fact, they've got to shape up, you know, and take care of business. But of course, then you have a great, you're really great to be over at the University of Chicago School of Social Service Administration. That helped tremendously too. So that's great. Mm. I want to thank you so much, and obviously, we are going to be talking again, right?
I look forward to it. I look forward to it. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure, Doc. Thanks so much.
Take care.
Right. Dr. Reuben Jonathan Miller, assistant professor at the University of Chicago School of Social Service Administration. He's going to be great. That book that he's got coming out, that's going to be a wonderful thing. And, you know, when I think about, you know, officer friendly and so forth, you know, I say that a lot of people don't even, that there is a connection there because that's not what happens now.
That's right.
Yeah, that's not what happens now because, you know, I can recall, hell, if officer friendly came with a questionable type of response to something he told me, Doc, to my dad, I got a problem. You know? You know, it's really something. Yeah, all right. Oh, thanks again. We look forward to the next one. All right?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, Doc. Great, great interview. But now, we're going to talk to
executive
Boss
producer,
Lady.
Boss Lady.
Boss Lady.
What a great show today, Governor Talk Radio. You knocked it out the park, as always.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Regarding any issues dealing with social services, housing, wellness care, please feel free to call America's Heroes Group at 312-803-2618. We're located at 155 North Wecker Drive, Suite 4250. Thank you, as always, to our global listening audience for watching us live on Facebook. Make sure you hit the Facebook like button at the top of our Facebook page. Therefore, you stay connected. We'll receive future notifications regarding shows, events, information, and resources regarding veterans, armed forces, family members, and the surrounding communities. We're so grateful every week to Mrs. Dorothy Lavelle, our partner of the Chicago Crusaders, and our article on veterans, armed forces, and their family members. It can be viewed online at www.chicagocrusaders.com. To subscribe to the Chicago Weekly Column with the one and only Governor Talk Radio Voices, Mr. Cliff Kelly and America's Heroes Group, please call the Chicago Crusaders, 773-752-2500, or send an email to ads@chicagocrusaders.com and request a subscription. On behalf of Mr. Cliff Kelly, America's Heroes Group, once again, this show today is dedicated to George Floyd and our veteran comrade, Dr. Conrad Worrell, who was a staunch supporter of America's Heroes Group. He will forever be missed and always loved and respected. To the technical producers at WVM, the best dynamic duo, Titus Williams, who helped me every morning get this show organized. To Mrs. LaTerriera Rando, who keeps it balanced and deliberate. Hello. Have a blessed, blessed weekend and a wonderful, wonderful Saturday. America's Heroes Group.